Welcome to Orbit City's number one podcast, Freelancing in Orbit City, brought to you by TaskSaver, Inc. I am your host, Eugene Calhoun, and today we are with Robert Carper, a financial advisor with Anchor Financial. Today we have a great conversation ready to go, and it's all about finance. Stay tuned as we dive right in.
Let's start the show.
Robert, how are you? It's been a while since we last met up, man.
I'm doing well, brother.
Thanks
how are
for
you?
Taking that time. Hey, I'm doing pretty good. Today was a really good day for me. I know it's, you know, only half the day, but I don't know. There's something about Thursday rolling into Friday. That's my like most productive. I don't know if it's because I'm like not trying to do anything on Saturdays. That's kind of like my day off. And so I kind of really push on a Thursday evening.
It's a pretty good incentive. Yeah.
I tell you what, man, I've got so many daggone kids that, you know, Saturdays are just crazy, man. So we start at 9 with soccer, and then we go until 3 with baseball. So,
oh wow,
we're just, yeah, I try not to have anything going or whatnot. But like I said, guys, we're talking everything finances today. And Rob, I know we traded some notes back and forth on some topics and things like that. So I'm really just gonna, you know, pick off our list, you know, see what works, and let's just get going. So my biggest question, and the one that I think most freelancers are wanting to know first, is kind of at what point should a freelancer begin to consider holding back money for taxes? You know, so for me, when, you know, I first started to freelance and become an independent, I really didn't pay attention to it too much. You know, I wasn't bringing in a whole lot of money and things like that. But as I've gone along this journey, I've definitely met tons of people, especially one freelancer who just didn't pay attention to it at all and got a nice $6,000 tax bill out of it. So at what point are you thinking we should start paying attention?
Yeah, that feels good. Love it when the tax man comes. So there's a conservative answer to this, and then there's a bunch of different answers depending on your situations, right? So conservative answer would be day one, first income, first cash flow, start setting that aside. Just because no one, unless you have the ability to come up with that whenever a bill actually comes, then I mean, it's just wise to have that set aside already. So it kind of gets into a personal cash flow management preference, really. And there are some operational questions as well. You know, what do you need at this moment in time for your business or what have you? But I think this is still subject to what's called Parkinson's Law. Are you familiar with this at all?
No, I'm not. Hit me up. Parkinson's Law.
Parkinson's Law. So it's the idea that it's kind of innate in human nature. As your income increases, your expenses are going to increase proportionately. So this is kind of the status quo, right? Yeah, everyone can appreciate this and, you know, relate at least at some point in life. So that's our standard, you know, status quo. That's the way we want to operate. Without any kind of intervention, that's probably how we would operate, right? So we have to be disciplined and try to remove ourselves from that equation. But, you know, just as it stands, so if you have the money, you're going to try to find a place to spend it, right? So
that's true. So what I'm getting is that because of Parkinson's Law, right? Income goes up, expenses go up because we don't know how to stop ourselves from spending.
Pretty much.
And getting new stuff. That it's probably the smart idea to just, you know, first gig, first opportunity or whatnot, go ahead and take off some of that, you know, for the government or whatnot. What would you say is, you know, the safest bet? You know, I've heard 30, I've heard 40. What would you kind of might say if you can?
Sure. So yeah, that's going to be a more specific answer than I'm willing to wisely give on a general basis. But it will depend on what you expect to bring in. First and foremost, it's important to note that if you're a sole prop partner or an S corp shareholder, you're going to be expected to pay estimated taxes, and so that's going to be, you know, payments quarterly, right? That's if you expect to owe $1,000 or more by the end of the year. So you're going to receive some penalties if you end up owing more, and there's going to be some interest on those. Yeah, fun surprises for people who may not have been expecting that. Also gets into the filing extension, the whole filing extension thing. If you have a CPA that's real trigger happy on filing extensions, it's important to know that, sure, you don't get hit with the failure to file penalty, but you're going to get hit with the underpayment and the interest on the amount that you owed in the meantime.
Yeah, we don't want to get hit with any of that. So S Corp, just to kind of get back for the people. So it's the S Corp and the sole props.
So any
That
1099 is basically a sole prop.
right. So you got 1099s are supposed to be saying, and our freelancers right now, these are full-time freelancers. This is what they want to do. They're transitioning from the workforce or whatever, however it may be. They're gonna transfer into 1099s, and they need to start thinking about quarterly taxes right up front. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. The government sees quarters as, January, February, March, April, and then May, June, July, whatever. So it's broken down three times. What happens if,
Well, four times.
four times? Yes. What happens if, I start in, let's say I start in July, and so the quarter's about to end, but I know I'm still gonna earn over that thousand or over that thousand because I plan on earning enough to actually live on. What should someone do then? Like, how do you kind of handle those quarterly taxes then?
So that all come into what you work out with your CPA. I mean, that's the safe answer here, and that's the one you want to lean on. I mean, it gets so narrowly focused on your circumstance that it's kind of impossible to give that advice generically.
So to the listeners here, this is my red alert emoji double two times out there. Pay your taxes. If you don't know what to pay for your taxes, get a CPA. Find a CPA because your individual circumstance really does dictate your situation and what that tax professional is going to, recommend that you do. So do take your time, learn up on that, especially with those quarterly taxes. See, that's something I didn't know, and that's why I try not to talk finances with too many people, especially when it comes this large. I'll help you create a budget all day. I can make that work, but further than that, it gets really dangerous. But kind of caveat off of that. So now we know we need to start holding money back, even at the beginning. Just kind of take a guess, put some back, get a CPA, talk to them, and you'll get your right kind of accurate number down the line. Let's talk about write-offs. This is a very
Exciting.
popular topic right now because I think there's that Instagram. I'm not on, what is it, TikTok anymore. I had to reduce my, social media footprint. But on Instagram, I see that people are like, "Oh, it's a write-off. Oh, do you know what a write-off is? Oh, it's when the government pays you back for something that you bought for your business." And it's like, yeah, okay. So what is a write-off? That is the question. What is it, man?
So a write-off is a deduction, is a, or you can put it this way, it's a reduction of your taxable income. So the government's not paying you back. You're just reducing the overall amount that you were actually taxed on. So the reason why you might receive some back is that, you paid those estimated taxes ahead of time, but then you incurred some large expense that you're able to write off or able to deduct. And so you ended up owing less on that tax bill. So
So
short
it's
version of that
like
is that.
it's short as that. So let me bring, are you familiar with Grant Cardone?
Man, that sounds so familiar. I don't know why.
So Grant Cardone is a salesman, and he's, one of the best. He's got the 10X, he's got the private jets. I mean, he's that salesman that people want to like be, you know what I'm
Right, right,
saying?
right.
Like, as far as success and grind and hustle goes. And what he did, he went on Jake Paul's podcast and on some of his just regular videos talking about why he bought a jet. So he ended up trying to buy this jet. He had a huge tax liability for whatever year it was, and he ends up calling this airline and whatnot. And he's like, "I need a jet because obviously I need this write-off because we're incurring these things, and so this purchase will handle taxes not only this year, but in subsequent years." Because I mean, a jet, $50 million. I don't know how much his taxes were, but I hope 50 million can cover some of it for a
Sure,
couple
sure.
or whatnot.
Well, he can
And
depreciate it over
so,
time to roll that out through the next like 10 years or so.
the depreciation cost there. So let's say, and I know it's so this is. Imagine world or whatnot. Let's say I come to you and you don't have to shout out any real numbers or even any fake ones, but just kind of run me through a process of, I've been paying my quarterly taxes. It's right on the money, but I still seem to owe. So you did my financial statements and everything I need to get done, and I still owe. Is that a common recommendation from CPAs to say, hey, you're still, you know, liable to paying this much taxes? You might think about purchasing, you know, this type of vehicle to, you know, get rid of that. And is that, it almost sounds like illegal. Like in a way I'm saying, it's like, we're going to evade taxes by buying a car. But obviously these things happen. It's obviously not that illegal. It's not illegal.
Right.
Unless
right.
It is. Tell me if I'm wrong. But, you know, why is that? And how often, you know, is that popping up that you're seeing that you got to give that advice?
So first of all, yeah, evading taxes is illegal. Avoiding taxes is not. There's a subtle difference. But CPAs, it's a kind of a go-to for them to suggest to buy some depreciable asset. It's almost, a lot of times it feels like it's their only real, was it, trick in the bag, I guess? That's mm-hmm. kind of their go-to. Yeah. There are a few more sophisticated options. There's some more exciting options in that you can, you know, if you don't really need a vehicle like that, there are ways to contribute to like a retirement account, you know, pay your future self while also reducing your tax liability. Those are the most satisfying in my opinion, because it's, you know, it's straight into my well-being in the future, right?
Yeah. And so that's the Roth IRA type stuff.
It's not the Roth specifically. There are options for a sole prop and some single member entities to contribute to a Roth IRA, but that's going to be after tax still, right?
So like, right,
you could make deferred contributions and reduce your tax liability that way, and you know, a number of other vehicles that allow us to do that. But there are limitations, of course. But that's one of the things that gets me most excited, is money I get to pay myself and also not have to pay taxes on.
Yes, I like that, and that's what I'm kind of hearing about now, right? So a lot of the times you learn based on, you know, what you're doing in your life and the kind of circles you're hanging around at that certain point. And so, you know, two, three, four, 5 years ago, you know, I didn't even know really what in Roth IRA. Man, yeah, I was all over that one. IRA. I didn't really know what that was. A 401k, all these things. I didn't know until I really kind of got into this business since. And, you know, I stopped getting paid by companies where they just kind of just did things based on a form I filled out on day one. Mm-hmm. It's more of something I need to pay attention to because I have to roll it on myself. And so it's very interesting how, for me, how confusing this really, really is. Let me ask you this. And I don't even know if you can answer this. Tell me if you can't even answer this or whatnot.
Sure.
Have you seen a situation where an individual was like, hey, I didn't pay my quarterly taxes. I haven't paid my business taxes in maybe like a year and a half because we just haven't had the money. What, if you've had that situation, what is kind of that recommendation? Because I'm sure there's a lot of freelancers at this point who were like me. It's like, hey, I'm really not making a lot right now. I'm not really paying attention to it. And then they kind of like, maybe they shot up a little bit. And they still just didn't do it. What is that advice to the freelancer who kind of just pushed it off?
First advice would be to partner with some sort of professional, whether it be a CPA mm-hmm. or someone on a team like ours. And it really, honestly, that's the only advice I can give, you know, compliance reasons, just responsibility of the profession. Things get too specific and dependent right. on individual circumstance for me to really give any kind of recommendation beyond that.
And that works. So again, guys, red alert, go see a tax professional. And that's one of the reasons, like, so guys, at this point we're talking and you guys are listening, and what we're understanding, the point I'm trying to get to right now is that tax law and business finances can get very complicated very fast. Especially if you're just transitioning from, you know, being maybe a student, maybe you're 18 going into freelance, or you're a high school student, or, you know, you're 22, 23, a college student just going. These are things that we really haven't had to think about. And even as you transition, let's say, you know, you're 35 and, you know, you've got this skill you've been honing in for the last, you know, 10 years, 15 years, and you're going to go out on your own. These are still skills that you may not know. So it's going to be of utmost importance to not put these things off and to go ahead and reach out. And there are incredibly reasonable priced, you know, CPAs and different firms that will help you out, like Anchor Financial. I'm going to plug you guys because, yeah, you know, I believe in you guys. I like what you guys do. And so I'm going to plug you guys. But let's try to move on from taxes, because those can get really specific. I think we got there. What I'd like to talk about next, and it's something that kind of I've seen on Twitter, I've talked to freelancers across the US about this, and it's, you know, what's the goal? And generally what the goal is to be comfortable, which is the complete opposite of what you see in a lot of social media, where, you know, hey, come get rid of your 9-to-5 lifestyle so that you can be rich and go to the Cabos all the time and work from the poolside and all those things that really don't happen way too often, because most people just want to be comfortable.
Right.
So the question being, how do you prepare for a decent retirement life when you know you just want to be comfortable? It's easy to be like, okay, I know I'm going to be like rich. I know this is what I'm working for, so I don't really need to worry about retirement right now because I'm going to use all my rich funds. Fair. If that's the goal, if that's your idea, do that. For us kind of grounded folks, and we're just like, I just want to be comfortable. I need, you know, $3,000 to $5,000 a month to pay my bills and then not have to worry about swiping my card when I go buy something silly. How do you prepare for that retirement life?
So first of all, I can't stress enough that starting early and thinking about it early is paramount, right? There's a bit of a crisis in retirement in America right now. Tons of people nearing retirement age are concerned that they don't have enough to do so. And like the median 401k for people in 55 to 65, that's median, mind you, but it's somewhere around 85k, I think, was the last poll, which is devastating. Yeah, that's not exciting. But besides that, I mean, the key to any good plan, financial plan, is similar to any other kind of plan, right? It starts with a vision. It starts with a clear vision, hopefully, you know, where you want to go, where you want to be. So I like to think of it like, compared to working out or compared to building Legos even. And when you start out first building Legos, my kid's too small to build to play with Legos yet, but I'm really excited about it because, I mean, everyone, clear to adulthood, enjoys playing with Legos.
Fair.
But when you play with little kids, they typically, you're just seeing them put stuff together, and there's no design in mind. They're just kind of building some monstrosity just because it's fun, and then, you know, the pieces are fun to play with. As they get older, and, you know, kind of how adults would play now, there's something in mind. There's a vision that they have for what they want to build, and there's an idea of the tools and the pieces that they need to create that, right? And you expand that out further. You look at any construction, you know, project going on around you. That took years of planning, years of design, typically, and then there's project management up, you know, startup, and then there's, you know, city filings and all that has to go into place. But it all started with, you know, a small, maybe kind of vague vision or design or desire that got clarified along the way. But it had to start with that. It had to start with the end in mind. So this
okay,
is no
so
different.
A clear goal. And that would be, you know, I would assume that would be very difficult for the young freelancer, right? I'm like having that clear goal. And I would say that, you know, to add this into you know, Tax Saver's offerings and whatnot, it may be very important for us to, when we're talking about our goal setting, to not only talk about where do you want to take your freelancing and how do you want to progress there, but because being able to maintain your finances is so important to your success as a freelancer, we should really start to talk about, in the other hand, where do you see, you know, where do you want your finances? At what point are you thinking about that you want to retire? What do you want? You know, how are you seeing or envisioning, you know, your 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s?
Right.
You know, so for me, it never really made, I'm not going to say it never made sense. It stopped making sense about 2 years ago for me to wait to 65 to retire. And I say that because I lost my grandma before she was 65. So she never got to retire. And so for me, I was like, you know, I don't want to work and work and work and work to retirement as the goal. And then maybe the possibility of not making it, I want to be able to kind of enjoy it. And, you know, that's the kind of the trend, you know, with our generation right now is, you know, one to kind of live now, not later. And so a clear vision was kind of hard for me to see. So now I know that I want to grind out my 30s. So when I'm 40, you know, 40 is kind of like my age where I kind of want to be able to say, yes, I want to work. No, I don't want to work. Yes, I, you know, I don't want to have the need to. I just want to have that want, like when I'm waking up, just like I am right now, I want to be able to go do something I want to do.
Yeah, financial independence.
Financial independence, that's exactly what it is. And I think most freelancers could kind of resonate with that, is that's kind of the purpose of, you know, let's earn as much as we need to live the life that we want to. And I can see that being very difficult for those 18 to 22 to kind of do. What would your advice be to that person? Is it, you know, just kind of take a guess? So like, how would you, if somebody, if, you know, 20-year-old freelancer comes to you and you know, they're doing okay, they're doing all right financially, and they're, you know, they don't have a plan. What kind of questions would you ask, or how would you kind of help them along to answer that?
So for some of the younger clients, actually for all the clients, we, when we're working out this plan, we start out with, you know, what does retirement look like to you as far as activities you want to enjoy, lifestyle you want to enjoy, expenses that you expect? So we're trying to get an idea of what kind of income we need to plan for, right? And now, obviously, the younger you go, the harder that's going to be. You haven't, you know, had enough time of paying for bills and paying for activities and saving for trips and things like that. So there's going to be a little bit of guesswork the younger you get, right? But but we got to build from somewhere. So you can still kind of project out based off what we've experienced now. Maybe we go down like a small checklist of these are about, I want to take this many trips. I want to, you know, see family. I want to travel this much. And you can kind of build out an expected income in today's dollars. And that's really where it gets a lot easier. We go with today's dollars, and then we do all the work of projecting out. I don't expect someone to
like, 5-year financial projections and whatnot.
Right. So we'll help people with that. But that's what it comes down to. So we're solving for income. That's what financial independence will mean. That's what, you know, a comfortable retirement will mean, is that money is coming in at or above the amount that I need for it to go out to do what I want.
Man, so, and here's a personal question. What got you into this job, this role, this, you know, where the knowledge set come from to where you wanted to do something like this and become this financial analyst and have all this information?
So first and foremost, it's, I've always had a concern. I didn't grow up with money. You know, we were always struggling. Everyone in my family was struggling. And so there's a sensitivity to that and the burden that comes with it, both on, you know, the parents that are trying to support the family and the kids as well. They feel that stress. I don't want anyone to go through that. And I just want to be a resource as much as possible to people who want to make those steps for themselves. And so, that's really the driving motivation. And I believe that everyone should have the opportunity to create the life that they want. And I think that the most important things in life are our time with our friends and our family, the experiences and the memories that we make. And I think that work, by and large, is just, you know, us basically trading time. We're trading time for the ability to support ourselves and our families. And so I want so badly for whatever we trade our time for, because time is sacred. Whatever we trade that time for needs to be spent as well as possible. It needs to be used as efficiently as possible. And, you know, it needs to work for you as much as it possibly can. So that's really what drives a lot of passion here, what led me into finance. And I feel like that's what leads a lot of people into freelancing, is they, you know, they want to be able to kind of, you know, get more control over that and make the time that they choose, how they sacrifice their time, and make sure it's working for them as much as possible.
Man, there's such an interconnection there. You know, you did make that connection between the freelancing and your own personal story there. And it's interesting to find servant leaders in different industries, right? Because on the one hand, if you went by and you're like, if you ask somebody, you know, describe your normal, you know, financial advisor or your CPA, you know, describe them, and it's not usually in the best of lights or whatnot. It's not negative. It's not like, oh, this guy, you know, had me and done me over, but it's like, you know, they're probably not telling me everything so they can make money off of me and things like that. But when you told me that story, you know, I really, and the audience doesn't get the benefit of being able to watch you tell that story or whatnot and to see the earnestness behind it. But it's nice to know that even in the financial game, you know, where things can get, you know, very, you know, cut and dry or very gray, that there are people who really are there just for your best interests and want to see you grow and want to see you kind of thrive, and that you want to do that and help. And, you know, that's the same reason why I'm here doing this for freelancers and trying to figure out and get these answers for them, so that they can lead that life that they want to. I think we're both on that same page, and I think that's what makes us, I think that's what's allowing us to work so well together, is we kind of have that same mission. We're just kind of approaching it in a different way that still benefits, you know, both sides. So I really, really love that, man. I really, really do. Let me bring us back, because I know we're running up on the window. The next thing I'd love to hear about, and this will be real quick, I'm sure. It's all about receipts. And this kind of goes back to, you know, taxes and write-offs and things like that. But, and I'm going to use myself as an example. The question is, what receipts should I be saving? You know, I don't have, my automobile is my personal or whatnot. It has business insurance on it, but it's my personal ride. You know, I have different subscriptions, like the podcast stuff that we're doing, that we're using. Is it important that I'm saving those? You know, I have a folder. You know, I was in HR. I did finance and things like that for other startups. So, you know, I have a blanket folder that says business receipts. But what should I be doing with those? Are they needed? And are there certain things that, you know, we could probably throw away? Like, do I need to keep my gas receipts?
Right. Okay. So as far as the gas receipts go, I would urge you to keep track of mileage instead of keeping track of your gas expenditures. So MileIQ is a good app. I use that one. QuickBooks, if you're running that, I'm pretty sure they have an app that has that feature as well. And you can, you know, delineate between personal drives and business drives. That's important to do. Not every drive is a business drive. That's
true. A good way to get in trouble. Taking a kid to school is not a business drive.
Right. Now, as far as keeping the receipts, so essentially, if you're keeping track, I keep track of everything, you know, in Excel. Mm-hmm. I keep track of it that way, but I do hang on to the proof of it, right? So in case you're audited, you want to have, you know, records for that. You can't just like tell them the number and say, this is it. I promise I tracked it well. Yeah, so that's the whole point of keeping receipts, along with staying organized and being able to actually, you know, come up with the right amount. I take a lot of pictures of mine and I email them to myself, so it's really easy to find them. You know, just subject line receipt, search for that. So if I'm ever uncertain, then an easy way to search that. That I just don't do well with cluttering up physical copies of a lot of things. So that's kind of the short answer of that. I cannot stress this enough. If there's any doubt as to whether or not something is a write-off and you should keep the receipt and keep track of that, then just keep it. And next time you touch base with your CPA, you know, let them know, and they'll tell you no. If it's not something they're comfortable taking a deduction on, they'll tell you no. But if you tell yourself no first, then you missed out on opportunity, right? It's a whole,
you might have missed out.
Yeah, you miss 100% some of the shots you don't take, right?
Hey, so for people, I don't want you guys to miss this nugget, okay? I don't want you, this nugget can kind of go over the head. Keeping your receipts, you know, it doesn't have to be in chronological order or anything like that, but like Rob just said, being able to just take that picture, you can email it to yourself, you can, you know, create a Dropbox file or something like that, that is strictly so when you need to go look for those receipts, that it's just right there. You can type in receipt, you can type in whatever, it's right there for you to kind of look at. And the summarize of that is keep all your receipts, because most likely you're like me and you just don't know. And that's okay. It's okay not to know, guys.
Yeah, but you'll get a sense for it.
Not okay to do. Yeah, you go.
So you'll get a sense for it. The more you're in business for yourself, the more you're doing this, you'll get a sense for what's a deduction, you know, what you can what you can keep track of, what you don't need to, the different amounts that to which you can expense things. And that's something that your CPA should be working with you on. That's something that, you know, we work with clients on, especially if they're engaging with our accounting department. It's never helpful to beat yourself up over things you don't know, because you only learn them once you get the opportunity to learn them. So
That's true. That's true. And if you know you need to learn it, go ahead and learn it, guys. That is freelance advice I'm going to give for any subject that we end up talking about or going in any way. If you don't know it, you got to try to find out, or this is not going to work out for you. There are too many unknowns inherently with freelance, and it's a very rocky road and it's very unstable. So if you
that's real.
can't grab that mental fortitude to go do the research or just ask the question or pick up a phone and call, you're gonna struggle more than you probably need to. So save your receipts and all that. One thing, I know we were gonna talk about, you know, business credit cards, but one thing that I want to talk about a little bit more is audited. I've been hearing that all my life. I think most people like have either seen it on TV or in a movie or something, like, oh my God, we got audited. They just took everything or whatever the mess may be. What is an audit? Why is it performed? And what's the best and worst case scenario? I know it's like three questions. I'll repeat them later if you need me to. But what
Okay.
is it? Why they performed? Best and worst case scenarios of it.
So an audit is basically when the IRS has some sort of red flag that you are not operating within your legal, you know, means or your legal opportunity and legal capabilities. You're trying to deduct too much, or you're fudging your numbers in some other way, and they come in and they're gonna request all the documentation that's going to lead them to the right answer. And my worst case scenario is you haven't been doing things the right way, and you're gonna get hit with some penalties, some tax, some interest, and some fines, more than likely. It could get even worse depending on how intentional and, you know, expansive your shortcoming
Right.
was. But what's really helpful to have there is a CPA that's going to actually speak with the IRS on your behalf. I have not been audited. I have had colleagues that have been, and you know, he had a CPA that really took care of most of the work for him. He told him personally. He goes, just candidly speaking, I don't want you to say a word because you have a loud mouth and you're going to get yourself in more trouble. Just let me do all the
That's
talking.
fair.
So that's the kind of person you
Okay.
want to go into bat with you on in a situation like that.
So is that an Anchor Financial? Can I bring you guys out to the plate? Can we take a swing together?
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, so guys, Anchor Financial for everything you need to do. So what you're telling me is that as a part of your offerings, that if in the event that someone does get audited or whatnot, and a lot of the freelancers that, you know, probably listening to this podcast and the ones that are, you know, taking advantage of our mentor and things like that, they're really new, so the chances of them being audited are slim, I would hope. But in the event that, you know, some wily IRS guy was really going down, if they had partnered with you guys already, they contracted you guys were their firm, you guys would go and be like, hey, for the most part, we're gonna get this. You know, we may need something, but for the most part, we're work, you know, with you on them.
To the extent of the services that our accounting team was helping with, right? So if someone's handling all their bookkeeping and they're there, then that's where all the problems lie, then it's going to be difficult for us to be like, yeah, let's help you out. Put you know, their man hours into it and their neck on the line for a bookkeeping issue that we didn't get to control in the first place. So I can't say that would fall into those parameters, but absolutely, yeah, we had a You know, they would definitely stand by the service that they performed and be able to help with any situation that the IRS decided to come up with.
You know, I'd be curious to see if maybe even your firm or another firm really came out with their own, like, you know, bookkeeping app. Because you guys, you know, and it'd be similar to QuickBooks, but QuickBooks is expensive, it's complicated. Most of the times you got to hire someone to do it, and like you pay for QuickBooks monthly, then you got to hire someone to maintain it and do all these things or whatnot. But I feel like a finance group would be able to hone in on like making an app, a bookkeeping app or, you know, template or whatever that would help freelancers out a lot, or just really anyone. And I don't know if that's something you guys have, but it sounds like it's a need out there.
I mean, yeah, potentially. QuickBooks, honestly, there's varying subscription levels to QuickBooks that may be more affordable. But they honestly have the market so cornered so tightly that it's difficult for anyone to break into that. And also, I will say that's not really the goal of Anchor, of our accounting team. Anchor Accounting's really just there as kind of a value add for clients. You know, we don't really market their services. They're there strictly to take up the needs of whatever clients come in for planning. And so they're not looking to break in that space or, you know, invent the wheel right. a little sleeker. Yeah. So,
hey, stay in your lane. You know what I'm saying? That's also very important. That's called focus. And that's another big thing we talk to freelancers about too, is having your focus and understanding like, yeah, we probably could create something and we probably could do that and or whatnot, but our focus is set here. So before we wrap it up, man, tell me just a little bit about Anchor Financial and you know, the services you'd like to promote today, or, you know, or just a little blurb, you know, give you, this is your time to, you know, shout out Anchor and yourself.
Sure. Yeah. So Anchor Financial, like I was saying, the whole idea is to, you know, limit the amount of hats that you have to wear, limit the amount of decisions that you have to, because typically if, you know, whether you're individual or family or a freelancer or business owner, you know, you have to make all these decisions with different professionals, different advisors, and you kind of have to duct tape your plan together, hoping that they all the pieces fit well. Well, the whole idea is that, you know, we have that accounting piece with a full service, full suite of services, fractional CFO work, accounting, bookkeeping, payroll, tax prep, tax filing, obviously. And then the financial sector, we have, you know, insurance auditing to make sure that those coverages are, you know, appropriate and pricing is optimal. We've got payment processing. You know, we have legal partners. We really try to make it a one-stop shop and to make that experience as seamless as possible to provide as much value as possible. And I guess that's, can't really put it any better than that.
Dude, I love it. I love a good, you know, one-stop shop.
I completely miss employee benefits. It's one of my favorite parts and I always miss it.
You know what, and that is something we're definitely probably dive into that again. There are a couple of more nuggets I'd love to dive into and bring you back on and things like that, but employee benefits is definitely one of those, you know, hot topics because we just don't get them anymore over here on this side. And so I'd love to get into talking about that as well. Hey guys, Anchor Financial, they really are the one-stop shop, and when me and Robert met a few weeks ago, that's what really kind of, you know, drew me in to him and what he's doing. Is when people are able to, or when companies are able to provide that one stop, it takes a level of confusion off, and they're removing a really big roadblock. So this is, you know, I'm shouting them out. Give them a call in the show notes. We'll have their website, you know, a general contact information if you guys want to, you know, get started early, because that's what you should do right when you're thinking about it. Then you can reach out and see what they can do for you. And guys, if you guys have any questions about anything we just talked about, or maybe any other financial questions, let me know. Send me an email at eugene.calhoun@tasksaver.co with those questions, or hit me up on Twitter at Eugene3614, and I'll get those over to Rob or see if I can get them myself if they're not too complicated, meaning if they're about budgeting, I will help you. If not, I will send you off somewhere else, because I don't want to get you in trouble with anybody. Rob, it was a pleasure having you. I appreciate you coming on with me. Have a great one, man.
Of course, man. I love doing it.